Hari Om to all of you. Today we will continue with chapter 2, verse number 39. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will say later on in chapter 3, verse 3, that in this world, Lokesmin, he has only given two parts, two practices that will take us to moksha, that will take us to salvation. And the two parts are karma yoga, path of selfless action, and jnana yoga, path of knowledge. In this chapter 2, Krishna has already explained to Arjuna the path of knowledge, that is jnana yoga, from verses 11 to 25. When Arjuna surrendered to Krishna and asked for help, first thing Krishna spoke to him was jnana yoga, path of knowledge. This jnana yoga is the same as atma jnana or knowledge of the self. It is one and the same thing. Here in verse number 39, therefore, Krishna says in the first line, Abhihita Samkhe. Abhihita meaning I have imparted to you Samkhya. The word Samkhe, don't get confused, it means one and the same thing. It means Jnana Yoga. It means Atma Jnana. Only different terminology used, but it all means the same thing. Krishna is saying, I have now already completed the jnana yoga portion. I have told you what is the knowledge of the self. All the qualities of Atman I have told you. Now he says, now listen to me. In the second line you see, Te imam srunu. Srunu means listen. And I am going to tell you now something different. I am going to give you some different knowledge. And what is that knowledge? In the third line, he says, Yaya Buddhya Yukto. This knowledge which I am going to give you, Buddhi means this intelligent knowledge which I am going to give you, it is going to unite you. So, I don't know whose phone is it. Somebody's phone going off. Yeah, just put it on silent. Okay. Is it off? Okay. Okay, so what he means to say is that this knowledge does not arise easily in us. To understand this Atma Gyan is very subtle knowledge. It is not easy for everybody to grasp. So what Krishna is saying now, you have to prepare yourself. You have to prepare the mind. You have to tune the mind to receive this knowledge. So what I'm going to tell you now is something that will unite you with this knowledge. And what is that which I'm going to tell you? In the second line you see Buddhi Yoga. Again, what Buddhi Yoga means, it means Karma Yoga. We must understand why is Krishna calling Buddhi Yoga, why is he calling Karma Yoga as Buddhi Yoga? Karma Yoga means doing action. But what Krishna wants to say is that just because you do any action, good action, does not mean you can call it Karma Yoga. That's why you need some knowledge. You need to gain knowledge. What is it that constitutes Karma Yoga? Don't think that just because I'm doing charity, I'm coming here for Gita classes, that is called Karma Yoga. What Krishna wants to say is, you must acquire the right knowledge. When you acquire the right knowledge, it will guide your actions. Then that is called Karma Yoga. So Karma Yoga is not simply doing good actions. It is acquiring the right knowledge and applying that knowledge in your actions. He will explain later. And what is the result when you acquire this knowledge and apply it in your actions? in the fourth line he explains, prahashyasi. You see the last word there, prahashyasi. Hashyasi means get rid of. Pra, when you add the word pra to it, it means totally get rid of. What will you get rid of from this action? He says, karma bandham. This bondage of action, you will be freed from the bondage of action. Now, we have to understand this. All the action that we do in life, every action that we perform for peace of mind. We want security, we want happiness, we want security through all our actions. Yet, we find that whatever actions we perform in life, what is the end result? Anxiety, worry, tension, problems, conflicts. The more actions we perform for happiness, nobody performs action to get unhappy or to destroy their peace of mind. We perform actions to gain peace of mind, to gain security, to gain happiness. Yet we find whatever actions or the majority of actions we perform bring us nothing but problems. So that's why we love TGIF. You know what's TGIF, right? Thank God it's Friday. And then we say OMIG. No, sorry, OGIM.
Oh God, it's Monday.
So we find work becomes a chore. Then we want to take what? Holiday. Why are you taking holiday? I want to get away from stressful. Life is stressful. Work is stressful. But Krishna says, if you gain the right knowledge of action, which he will give us in verse 47, 48, 49, 50. If you gain that right knowledge and apply it in all your actions, you will be freed from the bondage of action. What is bondage of action? Grief, anxiety, worry, conflict, all these causes bondage of action. They torment our mind, they trouble our mind. Yet what we want to do is, how through action can I find peace? Can I find happiness? Can I find peace of mind? So Krishna says, therefore karma yoga is not just simply doing any action. Karma yoga is buddhi yoga. You must first gain knowledge and then apply it in your actions. So he first introduces now. He says, I have already explained to you jnana yoga. Now listen to me. I am going to explain to you about karma yoga. And the very essential point to remember about karma yoga is that this happiness in action, the scriptures tell us, is not by changing your action. The scriptures are not telling you to change your action. Arjuna wanted to fight the war. Sorry, Arjuna wanted to run away from the war. What did Krishna say? Fight the war. Don't change your action, but change what? Change the attitude behind your action. It is not action that is giving you the stress, tension and worry. It is because of your wrong attitude that is why you are getting stress, tension and worry. So don't change your action. Learn the right attitude of action. So here in verse 39, Krishna is introducing this karma yoga philosophy. And we must also remember that there is a purpose for karma yoga. The reason for going through karma yoga is to purify the mind and prepare us for knowledge. So karma yoga prepares the mind for jnanam. And jnana yoga prepares the mind for what?
Moksha.
Karma yoga prepares the mind for jnanam. Jnana yoga prepares the mind for moksha. So, understand, jnana yoga is impossible without karma yoga. If you have not purified your mind, if your mind is a bundle of mess, then jnana yoga is not possible. Jnana Yoga is not possible without Karma Yoga, and Karma Yoga is incomplete without Jnana Yoga. These two points we must keep in mind. Jnana Yoga is impossible without Karma Yoga, and Karma Yoga is incomplete without Jnana Yoga. So having introduced this topic of Karma Yoga, we have to understand that there are so many types of Karma Yoga, isn't it? There are many types of selfless actions. So through prayers, through rituals, through all kinds of good deeds, we call this all Karma Yoga. And if we don't understand the purpose of Karma Yoga, it is to purify the mind, we get confused, then we run from all kinds of practices. Suddenly somebody, you do this kind of practice, you do that kind of practice, you do meditation, you do yoga, you chant mantras, you do not know what you are doing, you are running from one action to another action. But if we understand that the purpose of all action is to purify the mind, then you choose the action that suits your, what we call your inner personality. You don't have to worry, that person is progressing with this kind of practice, shall I jump to that practice, shall I go to this temple, shall I go to this guru, no. All the actions have only one purpose in mind, and that is to purify the mind. So choose the action that suits you, your temperament, and follow that action. There is no need to get confused. So if Jnana Yoga is difficult, in this Kali Yuga, many people say that in Kali Yuga, there are a lot of distractions, right? 5,000 years ago, when Bhagavad Gita was delivered to Arjuna, you don't have Astro, you don't have MTV, you don't have what, cineplexes, shopping malls and all that. Nowadays in Kali Yuga, tremendous amount of distraction. So people say in Kali Yuga, Jnana Yoga is very, very difficult. So if Jnana Yoga is difficult in Kali Yuga, what do you do? What do you do? Find out how to make Jnana Yoga easy, right? How do you make Jnana Yoga easy? Do Karma Yoga, isn't it? If you find Jnana Yoga difficult, this knowledge is not sinking in me, it is because your mind is not prepared. So you have to prepare your mind. How do you prepare your mind? You go to Karma Yoga. You increase more in Karma Yoga. It doesn't mean you give up Jnana Yoga, but you intensify your Karma Yoga. Okay, so Vedanta, we know it's a very dry subject. It is not easy for us to grasp it. So we have to prepare the mind, right? Not just jump from different sadhanas and we think we will get moksha. The scriptures are very clear. It is only through Jnana Yoga you can get moksha. So prepare your mind and go into Jnana Yoga.
At this point, probably the desires at this point.
Of Karma Yoga. See, that's why Karma Yoga is path of selfless action to purify the mind. So the only way to remove these desires is to change our attitude in all our actions. When we say all our actions, it means not only prayers and rituals, but how can I apply this philosophy in everyday living? In my home, in my workplace, in every relation, how can I apply Karma Yoga? So when we come to verse 47, 48 onwards, which are the capsule verses of Karma Yoga, we will understand how to rectify our attitude and apply that attitude in every action. Then the desires get sublimated, right? Okay, so having introduced now the subject of Karma Yoga, now in verse 41, Krishna glorifies the advantage of Karma Yoga. And then having glorified the advantage of Karma Yoga, in verses 42, 43, 44, he also tells us what is the result of not following Karma Yoga. So both sides of the coin are given to us. There is choice. We want to follow Karma Yoga, this is what happens. You don't want to follow Karma Yoga, This is the path of life that you go to. So let us understand first what is the glory of Karma Yoga. Verse number 40. So Karma Yoga is a way of life to grow internally. We must understand this very carefully. Karma Yoga is a way of life to grow internally. And we give importance to only inner growth more than external achievements. We don't measure our success in Karma Yoga by our external growth. We must measure it by our internal growth. The red chair, I hope they took away the red chair. It's dusty. There's one red chair that I hope nobody is sitting on.
Yes.
Okay. So, the philosophy of Gita is this. Peace of mind does not depend on what you have. You can have lot of possessions. The philosophy of Gita is, peace of mind does not depend on what you have, but on what you are. That is the purpose of Karma Yoga. So there are four goals in life we have discussed. The scriptures tell us about Dharma, Kama, Artha and Moksha. I have covered these four, so I hope everybody is clear about these four goals of life. They are called Purusharthas. Purusha means you and me, the human beings. Artha means goal. This is a goal given to all human beings that we must have Dharma, Kama, Artha, Moksha. So, what is Dharma? Righteous action, or we can say all the rituals, prayers, good actions that we do all fall under Dharma in accordance to the scriptures. What is Kama? Desires that we want to fulfill, right? You want to get an education, you want to get married, you want to have children, you want to go for holiday. All the various desires fall under Kama. What is Artha? All the various possessions that we want, right? Whatever big car, big house, etc. you want, all fall under Artha. And finally, there is Moksha. Therefore, knowing that there are four goals in life, what is Karma Yoga life? How do you define Karma Yoga life? There are four goals. How would you define Karma Yoga? Okay, how does it relate to these four goals? Dharma, Kama, Artha, Moksha. What is your attitude to these four goals? Sorry? Doing action without having any attachment to results. See, to a Karma Yogi, is one who gives priority to Dharma and Moksha. And Kama and Artha are but secondary goals. To a person who has riddled with so much of desires, he or she will give priority in life to Kama and Artha. And Dharma and Moksha become secondary goals. So, Dharma and Moksha are pushed aside. So, I will do every action to pursue my desires and possession, and I will give less priority to my spiritual growth. But to a Karma Yogi, Dharma and Moksha are the priority, are the main goals in life. It is not that I don't want Kama or Artha. I need food, I need shelter, I need clothing. But they are not the priorities in life. So here, Krishna talks about two benefits of Karma Yoga. The first benefit he says is, Iha, the word Iha is there in the first line. In this path of Karma Yoga, Na Asti, there is no, what? There is no Abhikrama Nasha. Abhikrama Nasha means, in every action that you do with the right attitude of Karma Yoga, there is no loss of effort. Every action will yield a result. The only problem is what? You do good action, it will yield a result. The only problem is what?
Next breath.
We do not know when it will come, right? The good deeds that we do, Krishna is guaranteeing us that it will yield a result. The only problem is we do not know when it will come. So the thing is, here Krishna is giving us a guarantee. You have to be patient. Every action will yield a result. That is a law of karma. And good action can only yield good result. The only problem is we do not know when it will come. So there is a beautiful poem composed by Kabir. You all have heard of Kabir, I hope. Right? And there is a beautiful poem he composed. Dhire dhire re mana, dhire sab kuch hoye, mali sinche sau ghara, ritu aye phal hoye. Which means, dhire dhire means slowly, slowly, be patient. Re mana means mind, please be patient. Dhire dhire sab kuch hoye, everything will happen at the given time, at the appointed time, everything will happen. And he gives the example in the next two lines. Mali meaning gardener, sinche sau ghara, even if a gardener were to throw 100 buckets of water on a tree, ritu aye, when the season comes, phal hoye, the fruit will come. Mango tree will only give you the mango fruit in the mango season. We are also getting the fruit of the whole world. No problem. Okay. So, mango tree will only yield you the fruit when the mango season comes. The gardener can put 100 buckets of water, you can put the best fertilizer, you can do everything, but the mango tree will not yield you the fruit until the season comes. So you put in the effort. Krishna is saying, you put in the good action. He guarantees us that karma yoga is abhikrama nasha. There is no loss of effort at all. You don't have to worry about it. Just be patient, the reward will come. If not in this life, it will come in next life. But it is recorded somewhere. You can be assured of that. And the beauty about this, in fact, in the next chapter, which is on karma yoga, he so beautifully explains this concept in chapter 3. Uses an allegory. If you look at verse number 14 in chapter 3, page 65. Very beautiful allegory to explain this concept of karma yoga. The whole chapter 3 is on karma yoga. He elaborates on karma yoga in chapter 3. And this one beautiful verse, using an allegory, creatures, meaning us, you and me, come from food. We sustain our lives because of food. Without food, we know we will all die. And what is it that nourishes the grains, the fruits and vegetables that we eat? What is it that nourishes the food? It is rain. And what is it that gives us rain? What is the cause of rain? It is God. God is the one causing the rain. Remember, all this is allegory. Beings sustain their lives on food. Grains need the blessing of the rain or blessing of God. And God will only give the blessings when... from our good actions, which he calls as yajna. He uses the term here yajna, which means life of sacrifice. When I live a life of sacrifice with the attitude of doing good for others, that is called yajna. So when I do a lot of good actions, I receive blessings from God. The blessings will come. That means as God releases the rain to nourish the plants, and the plants will nourish me, God will also give me the blessings which will nourish me. How will it nourish me? I do good deeds, the blessings of God will come like rain, they will nourish me like rain nourishes the plants. How do I get nourished? What?
You feel peaceful,
you feel happy, you feel contented, there is real peace of mind. The blessings come back to us in form of purity of mind, in form of peace of mind. So very beautifully, very allegorically he explains that to us. That nourishment comes back to us as a blessing from God. So here also, coming back to verse number 40, chapter 2, he says, Abhikrama Nasha, none, no good action will ever be wasted. There is a result somewhere. Okay, what is the second advantage of Karma Yoga? If you look at the second line, Na Vidyate, there is no, what? Pratyavaya, there is no adverse result. And this is one thing we have to understand very clearly. He says here, you won't get adverse result from Karma Yoga. You cannot get adverse results from Karma Yoga. Now, when we are doing some good actions and we receive some bad results, what is our main problem? We are on the way driving to Gita Ashram. Our mind is, we want to attend Gita class. Tire get punctured. Then you say, God, why? I've got such good intention to go for Gita class. Why even puncture my tire? So, we do good actions, but sometimes we receive adverse results. What is our problem? We associate the adverse result with our good action. But what did Krishna say about good action? From good action, only good will come. Therefore, understand, if you are doing a lot of good action and there is certain suffering, that adverse results you receive, those adverse results have nothing to do with your good actions. That adverse result has some connection with some past action, right? So, bad actions can only yield bad results. Good actions will only yield good results. There cannot be a bad result from a good action. That is what we must be clear. So, we must not feel dejected. We must not feel disappointed. On the contrary, that adverse result has come. It is burning up some past karma there. There must be a clear understanding of this. So, in fact, the scriptures do give us an example of Kumbhakaran. You know Kumbhakaran, right? So, Kumbhakaran, one of the brothers, Ravana's brother, he started performing a lot of austerities, rituals. He started doing a lot of rituals and austerities. His reason for doing the austerities and rituals was for the destruction of the devas. What he wanted was nirdevatvam. May all the devas be destroyed. So he kept praying nirdevatvam, nirdevatvam, and he started doing all the rituals. Devas got very worried. They said he is going to complete his rituals now. And when you complete your rituals according to the according to the scriptures, then God has to reward you with what you ask for, right? So as his ritual was coming to an end, the devas got worried, so they pleaded to Mother, Saraswati is knowledge, right? Saraswati said, you please go there and do something, do some magic show. So she went there, and as his ritual was completed, God came in front of him. He wanted to ask for nirdevatvam, may all the devas be destroyed. But Mother Saraswati confused his mind, and instead of saying nirdevatvam, he said nidravatvam, and he promptly fell asleep. So what the scriptures are trying to tell us is that bad action, bad intentions will yield a bad result. Through the stories, we are told all these things. Okay, so that means there are two advantages. One, Karma Yoga, good actions will only yield good results. And Karma Yoga, good actions cannot yield adverse results. We have to keep this in mind. That is the advantage of Karma Yoga. Okay, what else? In the third line, he says, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya. Dharmasya means on this path of righteous action, on this path of Karma Yoga, every little action you do, Svalpam apyasya, means every little action you do also will give you results. What does he mean by this? Normally, in the worldly life, we undertake a project. Only when we complete the project, then we see the result. If we only complete 50% of the project, we will never see the result, right? But here what Krishna is saying, every little action that you do will yield you a result. Okay, what does he mean by this? Now, supposing a person is going through some adverse times in his life. So you go to a priest and the priest tells you that you must recite Bhagavad Gita chapter 12 times a day. Okay, I'm just giving an example. The priest tells you to remove your the adverse situations you're going through in life, you must recite chapter 12 times a day. So you start reciting, but you only recite 8 times a day. Does that mean you get 80%?
No.
So what the scriptures are trying to tell us is, if you want to do certain prayers or rituals to gain something or to remove something from your life, then you must complete the ritual exactly 100%. Not only must you complete it 100%, you must follow you must follow the ritual according to its what you're supposed to follow. What are the materials you're supposed to use? How you're supposed to chant? If you even do something wrongly, there is even a chance of getting adverse result also. So that is if your intention is for worldly benefits. You want something or you want to remove something. But what Krishna is saying here, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya, on this path of Karma Yoga, it doesn't matter. If your intention is, I'm chanting chapter 12, my intention is not for worldly gains, it is to purify my mind, then it doesn't matter. Whether you chant this way, whether you chant that way, whether you make some mistakes, whether if you don't chant the whole chapter, you chant half the chapter, quarter the chapter, it doesn't matter. You will get the result also. Now that does not mean you follow my advice 100%. And if you are chanting chapter 12 every day, you say, oh, now he said I can chant one verse also enough. No. Don't change your sadhana. What sadhana you are doing, carry on. But understand what is your intention. If your intention is for gaining purity of mind, then you don't have to worry so much. You know, which way shall I sit and chant? Which time shall I chant? How shall I chant? Don't worry about all that. Most important is what is the motive in your mind. So Krishna says here, therefore, there is every action that you do for purity of mind, you will get the benefit. Even whatever little you do, you will get the benefit. You don't have to complete the whole sequence of prayers. You will get the benefit also. So you can see the glory of Karma Yoga if you only know how to fine-tune your attitude. And finally he says that in the last line, that it protects you from great fear. Bhayam, it protects you from great fear. Now, what is that great fear? As I said earlier, all the actions that we do with the wrong attitude bring about grief, agony, agitation, conflicts. But when we fine-tune our mind and perform the same action, we find that there is no fear. We don't worry, will this happen? Will that happen? What will what will this fellow say? What will that fellow say? No, because our attitude now has changed. Again, what is that attitude? We will talk about later. But once you change your attitude, all the fear of action is removed away. Secondly, what is the other fear? What is the greatest fear that we all have?
Death.
Fear of mortality. When we follow the path of Karma Yoga, it purifies our mind. With purified mind, we gain knowledge. What is the knowledge? What is the knowledge? Knowledge of the self, who you are in reality. Once I accept that I am Atman, what is the nature of Atman? It is immortal. So Atman is immortal. When I accept that I am Atman, Atman is immortal, which means what? I am also immortal. So the fear of death also goes away. I am not this body. After the body falls, I will continue to live. So the fear of mortality also goes away. That is the ultimate gain of Karma Yoga. So having explained to us about the advantages about Karma Yoga, in the next verses, Krishna is also going to explain to us what happens when you don't follow the Karma Yoga path. Okay? So let us look at verse number 41. So one of the problems that we face is when we read the scriptures, and in Hinduism we've got so many scriptures, so many types of scriptures, you know, endless number of scriptures. And every scripture you find will prescribe to you one type of sadhana. Some scripture will tell you this person, he did meditation, he attained God. Some will tell you this person sang bhajans of God, kept on singing, and he attained God. So sometimes we get confused now. What am I supposed to follow? Right? But here Krishna says that a person who is following Karma Yoga path, he gives in verse number 41, the very first line, Vyavasa Atmika Buddhi. This buddhi of the person, the intellect of the person, is Vyavasa, means there is clarity regarding my goal. What is my goal? Moksha is my goal. We are very firm, the mind is very fixed on that goal, that my goal is moksha. So Vyavasa Atmika Buddhi means that you are very determined, very firm on your goal. You don't waver from the goal. So there is no confusion in the mind, right? And the most important thing is that I want to discover this happiness which is not dependent on external factors. So I am very clear that the happiness which I am seeking is internal, which is dependent on myself. I will not depend on external factors for my happiness. So Vyavasa Atmika Buddhi is that we are very firm on the goal. And what else he says here in the second line, AK. AK means you have only one goal in mind, that is moksha. You are firm on this goal and you have only one goal in mind, that is moksha. You must be very firm, you must be very clear about this. So, he now contrasts that. And when you have that goal in mind, that moksha is my goal, then you know what are the actions also that you need to do. If moksha is my goal, what do I need to gain moksha? In order to gain moksha, what do I need? Jnanam. In order to gain jnanam, what do I need? Karma. So what should I start with? Karma Yoga. So the mind is very firm, the mind is very clear, you know the direction of path to follow. That is a Karma Yogi. And what is the other side of the coin? If you look at the last line in verse number 41, Avavyasayinam. Avavyasayinam means buddhi. That is a buddhi that is those people who don't have clarity in life, who do not know what they want in life. Not only in the material life, but regarding the spiritual life also, they are utterly confused. What is the goal? I also don't know. What is the means to the goal? Also, I don't know. So here he is talking about such kind of people, and he uses the word in the third line of verse 41. You can see, Bahu Sakha. Sakha means branches. Bahu means many branches. So the karma yogi has got what? One goal in mind. He is very sure about the action, what to do to reach the goal. Whereas a person, the other type of person is what? Bahusaka. His desires are running in 10 different directions. He doesn't know what he really wants. What is the purpose of spirituality? What is the goal of spirituality? What are the actions I should do to cultivate? He is utterly confused. The scriptures also present to us such a kind of person in the form of Ravan. How is Ravan presented to us in the scriptures?
Ten heads.
Do you think Ravan actually has 10 heads?
No.
You know why you cannot have 10 heads? One head in the center, 5 heads here, 4 heads here, what is going to happen? Definitely off balance. So, 10 heads means what? Too many desires, running in all different directions, kama, krodha, moha, lobha, bhaya, everything, every wrong characteristic is in Ravan's mind. So that 10 heads does not mean that Ravan has 10 heads. It allegorically presents to us this attitude of a person who is very unsure, his desires are helter-skelter, running in 10 different directions. Here same thing Krishna presents as Bahusaka, the one whose mind is like the branches of a tree, running in all types of directions. Now, therefore, if some person like this, who is not sure about the goal of spirituality, what to do in spirituality, these are the people who, he uses the word here in the third line also, Anantas. Anantas means there are countless diverse notions about spirituality. And such a person has got many doubts, many confusions. So this is the type of person that Krishna criticizes. That these are the people who get easily carried away. They are easily misled. In fact, this is where sometimes you find that certain people take advantage of this kind of people and promise them all kinds of benefits in spirituality, and they end up getting cheated. Isn't it? And somehow when they don't get the benefit, they run from here to here to here. In the end, what do they blame? They blame religion. They say, our religion is so confusing. Our religion, I get nothing out of it. I follow this, I follow that, I went to this temple, I went to this guru, nothing I got in the end. So these are the people that Krishna criticizes. And in the next three verses, 42, 43, 44, these type of confused people, Krishna says they are religious. He will describe them in detail. They are religious, but they have got very confused ideas about what is religion, what is spirituality. In fact, in chapter 4, Krishna will mention this also. He will say that this knowledge I have given previously. Previously means when? In the Vedas. At the beginning of time, when creation came, the Vedas also were given. In the Vedas, two parts were very clearly mentioned. Karma Yoga path, Jnana Yoga path. But what Krishna says in chapter 4, as time went along, more and more people, because of selfish desires, kept on practicing Karma Yoga. They started doing a lot of rituals because they wanted benefits, they wanted quick results. So more and more people took to Karma Yoga path, doing rituals and prayers for benefit. What did they neglect? Jnana Yoga path. By neglecting Jnana Yoga path, slowly this knowledge became less and less and less practice. So Krishna says, my purpose of taking this avatar to come down at this particular time is to re-establish Jnana Yoga. In Karma Yoga, we are all very perfect. We know the rituals, prayers, etc. What we lack here is Jnana Yoga. We don't abandon Karma Yoga, but we need to practice this side by side. So, here in verses 42, 43, 44, Krishna is going to explain the dangers of these people who are many branch, who have got too many desires, who are running helter-skelter, even using religion just to satisfy their worldly needs also. Okay. So, we must understand all human activities can be divided into three categories. The first is what we call sattvic actions, which later in chapter 17, Krishna will expand on this. What are sattvic actions? Sattvic actions are those actions which I do which benefit the majority of people. I don't only take my needs into consideration, I consider the needs of others also. So when I do any action, I consider society, I consider neighbors, I consider family, I consider friends. I want to contribute to the needs of others. Those are called sattvic actions. What are rajasic actions? Rajasic actions are selfish, self-centered actions, where I don't care whether you benefit or don't benefit. As long as I have benefit, it's okay. So all my actions are self-centered, rajasic actions. Third type of actions are tamasic actions. What are tamasic actions? In which a person does actions that bring harm to society, that bring harm or destruction to others. Example, corruption. Example, selling adulterated products, food products. They want to make quick money. They don't care whether it harms somebody's health, right? So those are called tamasic actions, which bring about destruction and which destroy other people also. Tamasic actions. So what is the result? If I do more sattvic actions, what is the result? What is the result of sattvic actions? Purity of mind, inner purity. There may or may not be material growth, but definitely there is inner purity. So I progress spiritually because of inner purity. I may see some material growth, but that is primary. It is not important to me. Important to me is purity of mind, internal growth. How do I know if I am growing purer? How do I judge if I am getting better? Am I getting better? Am I getting purer? How do I judge?
Peace.
How do you judge your peace of mind? Contented, happy. What else? In chapter 16, there are 20 qualities of divine qualities that Krishna gives us. Humility, compassion, love, non-violence, etc., etc., etc. These are called Daivi Sampat, divine qualities, 20 qualities. So we can use it as a checklist to see whether am I cultivating these qualities, patience, forgiveness, tolerance, etc., etc. Okay? So that means that I am going on the right track. I am becoming more divine in nature, sattvic actions. What is the result of rajasic actions when I do self-centered, selfish actions? What happens? In sattvic actions, there is inner growth, there is peace, there is spiritual progress. In rajasic actions, there is no spiritual progress, there is spiritual stagnation. You don't grow spiritually, neither do you fall spiritually, you are spiritually in spiritual stagnation. You will see a lot of material growth, there is no doubt. If you do a lot of selfish, self-centered actions, you will get a lot of material growth, there is no doubt about it. But what you won't get is inner growth, you won't get spiritual advancement. What about tamasic actions?
Spiritual downfall.
Spiritual downfall. That is what we call sin. Sin is nothing but by doing all these actions that harm society, harm people, you get a spiritual downfall. So there is no spiritual growth, there is no spiritual stagnation, only spiritual downfall. So now, if we look at this factor, these people who are confused on this path of spirituality, basically Krishna is talking about the rajasic and tamasic type of people here in verses 42, 43, 44. Those who do self-centered actions only for their growth, or those who do destructive actions. what is their nature. So here we will look at all the three verses together. In verse 42, there is one word in the second line called avipaschita. If you see verse 42, second line, the word avipaschita. So first of all, Krishna says, these people are avipaschita, means they are unintelligent, they are indiscriminate people. They live a life according to their senses, according to their own wishes. And what is the attitude of these people? That the primary goal in life is to acquire more and more possessions. The primary goal in life is to satisfy all my desires. This I give primary importance to. Such kind of people Krishna calls avipaschita, who lack the viveka or intelligence to really understand what is the purpose of this human life. So they live their life according to their senses. And we know that money can buy you everything. Money can buy you all kinds of pleasures and all kinds of possession, and this is what people are interested in, what he's talking about here. And also we must understand, in the Vedas also there are many rituals also given to us, that by doing these rituals we can get a lot of material satisfaction. You want a good spouse in marriage, you want good children, you want success in business, you want a lot of material benefits and comforts. There are many, many types of rituals and prayers that you can do. So what is the attitude of these people? To do as much as possible, as much as rituals as they can, to gain the maximum amount of material benefits. Because this is their priority of life. But what do scriptures also say? That although there are these prayers for your material growth, at the same time you should not neglect your spiritual growth. So what the scriptures are not against material growth, go ahead and do all these prayers, otherwise they won't give you in the scriptures. But at the same time they say, have a balanced growth. Grow materially, also grow spiritually. Give priority to both also. Have a balanced growth. But these people, he says, they are not interested. So the script, one of the instructions of the scriptures is Swadhyaya. Swadhyaya means study the scriptures every day. But to these people, they are not interested. All they are interested in, how to do more rituals, how to do more prayers. Even, in fact, you can see the irony of it. To study the scriptures, on the contrary, you don't need materials. You don't need money. You don't need to even go anywhere also. Right? All you have to do, take the book, sit in your house and read. Come for Bhagavad Gita classes, no charge, free also. Right? But to do rituals, what you need? I have to go somewhere, I have to buy materials, I have to pay the priest, I have to chant this thing, I have to do this, I have to do that. So much of effort they are willing to put just to gain back certain results. So they ignore the other instructions of the scriptures. I should study the scripture but spend maximum amount on all kinds of prayers. Okay. So what does he say about these people? If we look at verse 42 also, in the last line, na anya asti iti vadina. They are only interested in all kinds of rituals. They are not interested to do service to other people. They are not interested in seva and all these goals. So what do they say? What you see, the in English the translation is there, verse 42, there is nothing else than this in this world. What else is there? Eat, drink, be merry, give some charity, enjoy life. What else is there in life? You know, in chapter 16 also, Krishna talks about such kind of people as demoniac people, and he gives the attitude of such people. If you see chapter 16, verse number 15, page 285, the attitude of those people who have money to do all type of rituals, what is their attitude? Chapter 16, verse 15, page 285. I am rich and high born. Who else is like me? I shall perform sacrifice. I do all kinds of prayers, rituals. I give charity. I do danam and enjoy my life. This, what else is there in life? So this is the only purpose of their life, such kind of people. They give predominance to what? If you go to verse number 43, and this is the problem. You know, the main thing is, we find so much of happiness and pleasure back from these rituals, we cannot detach ourselves. You see, if you look at your old life, from young time you had certain toys to play. When you were 5-6 years old, you play with what? Balloons, right? But if you are 50 years old and you are still playing with balloons, means something is wrong, isn't it? So what does scripture say? Do the rituals, but get out of it also. Balance your life with other things. You cannot go on. This human life has not been designed for you to go on doing rituals and getting only worldly pleasures. There are other higher goals in this human life. So one must awaken to this type of goals. But if you look at verse 43, Krishna says in the first line there, kamat manaha. There are two words here, kama, atmanaha. Kama means desires. Atmanaha here means mind. The mind is only full of desires only. One desire satisfied, more desires come up. One desire comes up, more desire comes up. The mind is constantly churning up desires only. Now, another thing to understand, it is not the scriptures are criticizing desires. What do the scriptures criticize? It is not wrong to have desires. But what is the problem? What do the scriptures criticize?
The person gets carried away with the desires.
That we give undue importance to desires. So it is okay to satisfy, but don't give undue importance to desires. And that means what? Then you push aside all your spiritual goals. Right? So that's why when you tell people, why you not come for Gita classes? No time. But for shopping, lot of time for shopping. So we need to balance our life. So here Krishna says, kamat atmanaha, those who are give predominance only to all types of desires. And they, on their list of desires, there is a very, very big list. When they go to temple, very big list they have to ask God. But what is not on this list? Dharma and moksha are not on this list. Everything else is there on that list. So this is what Krishna says, kamat manaha. And what is the highest goal of these people? The maximum pleasures that you can enjoy. What is the highest goal? Swarga. So he says here, verse number 43, swarga para, heaven. That is the maximum goal they want to attain. But what is the one minimum qualification you need? First you must die, isn't it, to attain heaven. So they are willing to also prepare that after my death also I want to continue enjoying all kinds of pleasures. And again, there are prayers in our scriptures where you can have all these kind of pleasures. Through all the good deeds that you do, through all the prayers that you do, you can acquire a place in heaven. So swarga para, their highest goal is heaven. And we come back again to verse 42. Pravadanti. You see the word in verse 42. Pravadanti. Pravadanti means not only do they follow this lifestyle, but they also want to convince others also to follow their lifestyle. So not only they follow this lifestyle of material pleasures, but they want others also to join them. And we few people who think that we are very spiritual, we mix with them to try to do what?
Change them
and bring them to our side. But instead what happens? Why we follow them here also? Krishna says, pushpitam vacham. Beautiful word he uses here. Pushpitam vacham. Vacham means words. Pushpitam means your words are so flowery, so sweet, you know. Brother, so nice, why you want to go Gita class, come here, enjoy, you know. We speak so nicely, you know, but they got pushpitam vacham, bombastic language. They go flowery language. Instead of you convincing them, they will convince you. So then you will start thinking, hey, maybe he's right, you know. Why should I come for Gita class? I should go and join them and enjoy. After all, God is eternal, he can wait for me. Isn't it? God will forever be there. So after retirement also, I can go and attend all these classes. But don't forget, when you wait and wait and wait, then what happens?
It's never going to be better.
Huh?
It's never going to be better.
Knee problem, cannot walk to class. Eye problem, cannot read the book. Ear problem, can't even hear what the teacher is saying also. Isn't it? So don't wait. That's what the scriptures are saying. Don't wait. Start the process as early as possible because you never know what is going to happen. Right? So push pitam vacham. So you have to be very careful. Otherwise, instead of you pulling them to your side, you get carried away with their talk because they have very flowery language, very bombastic language. And that's why also there are a lot of people who have the gift of talking also can convince many people to follow them also. There was one article I was reading many years back where they were talking about these girls who were lured into all kinds of vice activities. And one statement the man made was very, really stuck my mind when he said, he was asked, how do you lure all these girls into these wrongful activities? He said, you promise them heaven, they follow you to hell. You show them heaven, you show them all the nice things, you know, by following this lifestyle, you know, so many nice things. But when they actually come into it, they go to hell. So it is very easy to give in to our desires, to just follow all these people blindly. But at the end, we can only see nothing but destruction. But Krishna says this is the lifestyle of such people, that all they desire is all kinds of pleasures and then do prayers to go to heaven. Now, the question is, if you really think about it, what is wrong with this lifestyle? I'm playing devil's advocate. Huh? I'm showing you the other side. Huh? You say, what is wrong? Okay, I do prayers, I enjoy my life, then I die, I go to heaven, some more enjoy. Then come back again, I do some more prayers, some more enjoy. Die again, go to heaven, some more enjoy. What is wrong? What is wrong with such a lifestyle? Why nobody asks this question? Is there anything wrong? I'm enjoying one. You tell a person, you know, this is wrong, you know, you should not do. What is wrong? I am enjoying. I go to heaven also, I enjoy. Come back again, I enjoy. What is wrong? So, sorry, human birth is very hard to achieve. Yes. So, there are a few points here we must understand. First of all, if initially we have few desires, we can satisfy them. But what happens when we lose control of our desires? Desires start multiplying. The mind can project desires faster than your body can satisfy, isn't it? I can think of 10 different desires. I want car, I want house, I want handphone, I want this, I want this, I want this. But it will take me a certain time to satisfy all these desires. I need money, I need to work hard, right? So as the mind keeps on multiplying desires and you're unable to satisfy your desires and you're unable to control those desires, what happens? Anger, agitation, frustration happens, right? Huh? Madness. So we are unable to control. We think we can control, but in the end, instead of becoming a master of desires, we become a slave of desires. So anger, agitation, frustration. And then, secondly, when I'm also not able to satisfy so many desires that my mind has cropped up, what happens? I take shortcuts, corruption, bribery, all kinds of illegal means, and in the end I end up violating dharma just to satisfy my desires. So I start taking shortcuts because there are too many desires I cannot satisfy the legitimate way, I follow the illegitimate way. So I start taking shortcuts. So it is said, if you take shortcuts in life, you will be cut short. So we must understand this. It can lead to adharma when we cannot control our desires. And thirdly, if your only desires are to eat, drink and be merry, when you return back to earth, as the sister rightly put it, there is no guarantee that you will get back this human life. Because if all you want to do is eat and drink, you can come back as a stick or donkey or whatever. You don't need a human life. So we must understand this clearly. Temporary pleasures we can get. What are the animals you came up with? No? Okay. So this is what we must understand. But people who are carried away with their desires don't understand all this. So, okay, pushpitam vacham. Okay, and all this will lead to what? Here Krishna also explains in verse 43. We come back to verse 43, second line. Janma karma phala pradam. Means what? Karma, I do actions because I want results, that is phala. So karma leads to phala. Phala leads to what? Then death. Then because I had so many desires which still could not be fulfilled, then what happens?
Janma
again. Janma happens, karma. Karma happens, phala. Again cannot satisfy, die, again come back. So we are continuously on this merry-go-round. We cannot get out of this merry-go-round. And in chapter 8, verse 6, Krishna said, what your mind thinks at time of death, in that direction it will go. Your next birth is determined by what are your desires, right? And these desires are accumulation of our wrongful thinking, our wrongful way of life. They will determine our next life. So a person is just caught in this janma karma phala pradam. Okay, so the desires produce more results, results will produce more births, and we keep on going on and on in this cycle of birth and death. So what does Krishna say finally in verse 44? In verse 44 he says, he uses the word, if you see the first line of verse 44, Boga Aishwarya. Their goals are only for enjoying their life. Boga means all kinds of enjoyments. Aishwarya means all kinds of power they want. So the whole life is only dedicated to Boga and Aishwarya. And that's why they run from temple to temple, guru to guru. All kinds of different rituals they do just for satisfying the Boga and Aishwarya. If you tell them, go to this temple, you can satisfy all your desires, they'll run here. Somebody tells them, no, go to this guru, will satisfy all your desires, they'll run there. They run from one place to another place, satisfying. And in the end, when they end up into state of frustration, they end up blaming religion itself. So now in verse number 44 also, Krishna says that Chetasa, Chetasa means whatever understanding they have about religion, they get carried away by all types of rituals, etc. And all their desires, they just follow, and in the end, they either, as I said, they end up taking shortcuts to satisfy their desires, or they end up getting agitated and frustrated. So finally, he ends that in the last line of verse 44, in the third line of verse 44, when he says, Vyavasa Atmika Buddhi, these are the people who don't have a purpose in life, who don't understand the purpose of religion, what is the goal of religion, and what are the right practices I should be following, who are totally confused about religion. So they come to their own destruction, they come to a spiritual downfall. Obviously, now the next question will ask, then what is the right way that we should follow? So what is the right way you should follow? You have to come back next week and hear some more lectures, which he will start talking from verse number 45. Okay. So any questions at this stage? Please feel free to stop and ask questions, because anything you don't understand, go ahead and stop, and you know, we can clarify all your doubts. If there are no questions, I just want to let you all know that the retreat is on for January. We've got all 28 places full. And for all those of you who are coming for the retreat, please try to arrange carpool and transport there, and reach there on time. Right? I think you've been receiving messages from Kumara. Any of you, those of you not received, please let him know. Okay, so that you'll get all the mailers. Okay, so we end with a prayer.
Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru.